I do believe you were fated by the goddess to become a bastion, Nathan. You have a mix of talents that is rare. Political savvy, strategic and tactical knowledge, a calm head, sorceress ability, and discretion. The latter is definitely one I've valued from Leopold during my time as emperor. Really? And not my friendship? Leopold said. He shook his head. I guess that means I'm not invited to drinks tonight. The emperor rolled his eyes. Perhaps I shouldn't have complimented you on your discretion. Nathan remained silent as the two old men bickered. The situation was unfamiliar to him. In Falmir, he had never become close to the king. He had always been a bastion, a simple defender of the realm. In the end, that had helped doom Falmir and the royal family. He and Gareth had been kept out of their affairs, and the rebels had easily ousted the royal family, given the opportunity. He rarely let the thought linger for long, but he couldn't help think it now. Wasn't that the fault of Charlotte and Falmir's royals as much as it was his own? Faced with the joviality of Emperor Gortal and the friendliness of Alice, he found his past relationship with Charlotte somewhat hollow. "Well, the past is the past," the Emperor said, causing Nathan to jump. "We can only take the world as we see it. Getting bogged down in my mistakes has always been a sin of mine, but Leopold has been there each and every time to help me move through them. Even now he's helping me with this current mess." His smile turned bitter. "But you, Nathan."
"Yes, Your Majesty," Nathan said.
The Emperor waved a hand angrily. "What did I say about titles?"
"I can tell that you're Alice's grandfather," Nathan said dryly.
A deep, booming laugh escaped the Emperor. It rapidly transformed into a rasping cough, and he gripped his chest. Melis and the Beastkin bent over him in a panic, but he waved them off.
"I'm old," he said. "Can't even laugh without my lungs trying to explode."
"Gortal," Leopold said, frowning.
"I'm fine."
The Emperor continued to wave off concern.
"See? Back to normal. But I'm glad that you see me in her. Sometimes I worry."
Sighing, he continued,
"Well, never mind. There's much to be discussed, but we should find the time to talk, Nathan."
The next half hour was spent discussing larger political issues. Nathan briefed them on his current recruiting activities. They discussed the rising discontent in the Empire about the new territory. At some point, they even covered the financial situation, although Nathan struggled to keep up.
"Sorry we're late," Alice said, as she stepped inside with Anna and Narime. "Grandpa really wanted to be sure of our votes tomorrow."
"So do I," the Emperor said, smiling at Alice.
"Then ask him yourself," she shot back. "How much did I miss?"
She looked between the three men with a questioning look. Behind her, Anna took up a position beside Nathan, and Narime joined the line of champions.
"Nothing too important," Nathan said.
"Indeed," the Emperor said. "Now that we're all here, we can discuss the most important matters. First, the Nationalists have pushed for a joint sitting of both colleges. They failed to convince the new Federation Dukes to resume war against Trafome."
Narime coughed. Then Anna coughed and mumbled something to Nathan. He rolled his eyes as everybody looked at them.
"Do we have a name for the new duchies, Your Majesty?" Nathan said.
Now that everybody was present, he sincerely doubted no titles was in effect.
Good point." The Emperor stroked his beard again. "Perhaps we should call them the Armica Duchies?
That will antagonize the Nationalists, given it will sound like an extra archduchy," Leopold warned.
"That's the point," the Emperor replied dryly. "They need to realize that the Empire has expanded. What did they think would happen when we conquered new territory? That it would just sit there with nobody ruling it?"
"I imagine they thought they'd rule it,"
Nathan said. A mixture of grimaces and wry smiles rose on everyone's faces.
To continue, the Amica Dukes oppose war. The Lord's College hasn't voted on the peace terms yet. There'll be a showdown tomorrow when both colleges come together, the Emperor said. Hence, Alice, I have to confirm that we will win.
We will, she said. What followed was a detailed rundown of votes that Nathan didn't even try to follow. The Diet's voting system was complex, particularly as every noble had only one vote. Alice talked about which counts would abstain, which nationalists had defected, who had been bribed, who was being intimidated into voting or not voting. Nathan understood the words, but the sheer amount of people involved was oppressive to him. He supposed it was similar to commanding an army. Where he kept officers in line, Alice wrangled nobles. Except Nathan's officers were a touch more reliable and loyal. These nobles were unelected, and as such could do whatever they liked for the most part. A number of the votes came from bribes or promises, such as not passing certain laws. This may be a stupid question, Nathan said when a lull arose, but I get the impression that a lot of the proposals in the Diet are fake. Alice and the Emperor smirked.
Oh, what makes you think that? Alice asked, her smile indistinguishable from a cat's.
Because you're talking about giving up on half of them in order to convince nobles to vote for peace, Nathan said. He raised an eyebrow. Are you basically threatening them with proposals in the Diet if they don't support you?
Yes, Leopold said flatly. That's why our fiscal and military situation is so tight. While we need to raise more from the nobles, we're letting them off in exchange for support for peace.
Something clicked in Nathan's mind. But I'm still recruiting without any real issues, he said slowly.
You have a beastkin enclave and a rather significant advantage, Leopold said.
Indeed, the Emperor said.
And that brings us to our next point, now that we've established that peace with Trofome is inevitable. Your agreement with the Imperial Sorcerer's Lodge. This is in accordance with your oath to the goddess, yes?
It is, Nathan said, feeling he wasn't lying. If he was only helping them develop technology that existed in his world, how could it be a violation of his oath?
Then it's fine, the Emperor said.
They discussed more matters. Hours passed. The knights brought in chairs, and Nathan noticed that they carefully investigated each piece of furniture as it was brought in. Melis's overwhelming presence reached into the room as she personally inspected the chairs. Why she didn't make some herself was beyond Nathan.
I'm not you, she said aloud, as if reading his mind. Her accent was thick and clearly belonged to Trofome.
Everybody froze.
The chairs, Melis said, waving a hand at them. I don't craft.
Nathan scratched the back of his head as Leopold smirked at him. Your talent at creating opulent castles has been spoken of widely, Leopold said. Ambassador Sarive brought it up when he came here recently. Ah, Sarive, the Dark Elf ambassador from the Aurelian Spires. He did, and what was he in the Laic for? I assumed he'd be busy, Nathan said.
He wants me to oversee Tonius's trial, the Emperor said gruffly. The council is ruffled. He didn't say as much. He never tells you anything so clearly, so much as implies it with his honeyed words. But something is awry in the spires.
You're not going, however, Alice said.
It sounded as if this discussion was a repeat.
No, but I feel you should, Nathan, the Emperor said, pointing a wrinkled finger at him. You know Tonius. You understand what caused the cascade. Astra herself approves of you.
I need you to find out what is going on in the spires.
The last thing we need is for one of the oldest nations on Domar to collapse.
Nathan agreed, on many levels.
Do you want me to contact them? He said.
If you're happy with the assignment, I'll inform Sariv. Given he approached you himself before, I suspect he will do so again when the spires are ready for you, the Emperor said.
He sighed.
For now, let us worry about the Nationalists.
The meeting broke up. Nathan noticed that the Emperor remained seated and that Alice remained behind with Leopold. But he didn't poke his nose where it didn't belong. Something about Alice's expression made him think their discussion wasn't related to politics. Instead, he left with Anna and his champions. There was someone else he was curious about.
Anna, where's Fire? He asked.
Kiana tilted her head.
Fire? Your competition, Sen said. Another horse girl, and she idolizes Nathan even more than you do.
I don't, Kiana rolled her eyes. She's from the Federation, right?
We're different. Uh-huh. You both have blonde hair, horse ears and tail, and are hot. And are hot for Nathan. I'd say it's a race, and she's definitely keen.
Sen elbowed the unicorn in the ribs. Kiana turned cherry red and refused to look at Nathan or anyone else.
She asked to be given the day off, Anna said. Said she wanted to meet with some beastkin here.
Fire knows beastkin in Alaik? Nathan said in disbelief.
Anna shrugged. Surprisingly, it was Kiana who spoke up.
You're talking about a blonde horse beastkin who likes you, right? I think I know where she might be.
The fact that such a simple description allowed Kiana to identify Fire concerned Nathan. She led them outside the palace grounds, which required them to take carriages for security reasons. Eventually, they arrived at a large church dedicated to Omria, only a few blocks away. Despite how close it was to the palace, the buildings looked far cheaper. Many more beastkin walked the streets, and there were more normal handcarts and wagons than horseless ones.
In here, Kiana said.
The sign outside concerned Nathan. This was clearly a church for beastkin, but the day's session indicated anyone was welcome. When they stepped inside, nobody greeted them. The pews were almost full. Several varieties of beastkin ears poked up from the crowd, all attentively listening to the speaker. Many had hands clasped in prayer. More than a few humans filled out the crowd. Statues and stained glass images of Omria lined the walls of the church, but it was simply furnished otherwise. The stone architecture lacked any trim, and the cracks showed in many corners. The building showed its age. A wolf beastkin in an Imperial Army uniform spoke from the speaker's podium. She didn't wear Nathan's crest. Her words spoke of how she had fought against Trefome, of Omria's guidance. Lots of filler about the goddess. In general, it was a speech about how her life was better because of Omria, and because the Empire had given her a pile of money to fight Trefome. She now had the funds to do something outside her village. Given how many beastkin nodded, Nathan wondered how many of them shared her story. The pay for Imperial soldiers was far greater than beastkin made from farming, and most beastkin were farmers or hunters, or some other rural job that barely subsisted off the land after taxes. The wolf beastkin left the stage, and a cat girl took her place. She wore the robes of a priestess of Omria.
Our next speaker today is, she began to say,
but the crowd began to chatter, and Nathan missed it. He blinked.
Is this normal?
Kiana smiled uncertainly.
For us, yes. I've been to human sermons, and everybody is so quiet, and only the priest talks. But for us, worship is communal. We share our stories and wisdom. We don't have campfires and villages together around, so we come to a church at some time in the week to talk about it.
That was different.
Fay never went to the chapel, and he'd never intruded on the religious behavior of his beastkin in his world or this one, so this was new to him. Maybe he should have paid more attention in the past. Then his attention was caught by the next speaker as she walked up on stage. She was a golden-haired horse-beastkin with red eyes, wearing an Imperial Army uniform, and she openly wore Nathan's crest on her arm. Fire smiled brightly at the crowd, almost certainly aware that Nathan stood at the back.
"I'd like to tell you all about what it's been like as a beastkin in the Federation, especially now that we've been liberated. And I'd also like you to know who is responsible, because I think we all know how important it is that we remain free," she said.
The chapel fell silent. Every eye fixed on her, and every beast ear pricked upward, as Fire began her fiery speech. Chapter 11. Listening to Fire's speech proved uncomfortable for Nathan. She retold the events of his invasion of the Federation through a very different lens, one entirely focused on the beastkin, and that reinterpreted his actions in almost messianic ways. Nathan held in his grimace when she brought up the beastkin slaves he let out of TARDIS. In reality, he took them because he had no reason to refuse them, and he was worried about a brutal slave uprising. To Fire, his actions were symbolic. He rode into TARDIS without a battle, captured Tawnius without a fight, and led a procession of beastkin slaves out of the city. Weeks later, the Federation fell without a fight, and all beastkin were freed. The audience listened intently, enraptured by Fire. She was a natural at this. Her passion shined through, as did her religious fervor, and she showed a level of eloquence far beyond anything Nathan had seen from her before. Her speech shifted into the current situation and how life was improving under the Empire due to the Emperor, Anna, and Nathan. He looked around at the listeners. A grim expression crept onto his face. Slowly, he began to understand something that he had thought he understood, but had never really comprehended. It was late afternoon. Many of those here had finished work for the day or were preparing for an evening shift. Their clothes and uniforms spoke volumes about their jobs. The wolf girl from earlier was far from the only soldier from the Imperial Army present. Guard uniforms, soldiers from private nobles, mercenaries, smiths, laborers, burly warehouse workers. The list of physical professions went on. Some of the women differed, but not as many as Nathan might have thought. Nathan preferred beastkin knights and soldiers due to their inherent physical advantage over humans. He was far from the only person who knew this, given the sheer amount of them serving in the Royal Guard and knights. When it came to raw physical labor, a beastkin had a massive advantage over humans. A wolf beastkin could carry things that would need a dozen men. Even the dullest merchant knew the competitive advantage that could give them. In Falmir, beastkin had never integrated into society to any great degree. They had remained slaves until the last few years, when the sheer volume of refugees had made the practice too dangerous for the nobles to continue. But too little time had passed for society to change. Emperor Gortal had ruled for nearly 40 years, after his father's death caused him to be elected over his elder brother. One of his earliest actions had been to ban beastkin slavery in the Empire. That one action had wound its way through the Empire. Most beastkin in this church had never lived under slavery, even if their parents had.
"I don't say this to scare you or anger you or turn you on others," Fire said, as she finished a section about the Nationalists and their threat to beastkin. "But we must remember who it is that supports and helps us. The Watcher Omria looks over all of us, does she not? If we are all protected by her light, why do some say otherwise?"
Ah, shit. Nathan knew where this was going. He'd heard the same argument before, in another world. In Arcadia, the elves and beastkin had used similar arguments against the fairies who ruled them with a gold-plated fist. The resulting civil war had torn the Republic apart at the worst time. The Federation and Arcadia had collapsed at almost the same time, resulting in a mass evacuation west, and a grand defense along the Garrick Mountains and the Spires. A cold pit formed in Nathan's stomach as he remembered the cause of Arcadia's turmoil and the aftermath. Who was Fire? Reaching out to check on her with his magic senses would cause trouble. For that matter, he already had confirmed she was an ordinary beastkin champion when they first met. She couldn't be a messenger. He could even use ascended magic now, so it wasn't as though she could hide from him. He calmed down, but made a mental note to ask Kadria about the horse beastkin when he had the chance.
"We are all Omria's children," Fire declared. "There are those that defend us. Emperor Gortal, Bastions Leopold and Nathan, Archduke von Milgar, Duchess von Clare. The list is many. But I want you to remember how I started my story. Things are better now, but not everybody follows Omria's teachings."
Fire bowed her head, finishing her speech. The church erupted into a cacophony of chatter, applause, jeers, and cheering. Nathan didn't have a clue who supported or opposed her. Nobody rose to their feet or threw anything. Then again, they hadn't interrupted her, so even if they disagreed, they had done so politely. Then again, Fire had waited until the end to accuse the Nationalists of being heretics. What a firebrand. The priestess ran up to the podium and asked repeatedly for people to restrain themselves to talking. That amused Nathan. "Ah, so you can talk as much as you like, but no clapping, cheering, whistling, or insults," he said.
"You say that, but you're talking," Sen said.
Kiana scowled at him. "Is it really that strange?" He winced and raised his hands to ask for peace.
"I don't mean it like that, but it is oddly specific."
"It's about respect for the speaker. Although, usually speakers don't accuse people of heresy," Kiana said, mumbling at the end.
That's Fire?"
Her eyes narrowed at Nathan.
"I am Fire, yes," the horse girl said, appearing as if summoned.
Kiana jumped, then turned around and glared at the new arrival. Now that they stood next to each other, their similarities and differences were only more apparent to Nathan. Fire had a few inches on Kiana, and her hair was a deeper blonde, rather than Kiana's platinum. Only Kiana had the unicorn horn. Their eyes were opposing colors, Kiana's blue and Fire's red. But both had blonde horse ears and tails, and were of similar frames and general appearance. Once Kiana wore a champion's uniform, they'd be difficult to tell apart at 100 yards.
"You're thinking that we look similar," Kiana pouted at him, her face reddening.
An odd smile rose on Fire's face, but it was uneasy. Her eyes wavered as she looked at Nathan, and he saw a question in them.
"This is Kiana, isn't it? My—"
Fire cut herself off, then looked around. More than a few people stared at them, their eyes locking onto the Imperial Army uniforms and Nathan's Bastion emblem. "Let's head somewhere else," Nathan suggested. He didn't want to be mobbed, not after that speech. He wasn't anyone's messiah. They found a nearby restaurant. Given the time of day, the only customer was an old man who sat at the bar, chatting with the owners. He had wolf ears. The owners and the staff were beastkin as well. Nathan did his best not to feel uncomfortable. Kiana had led them into a part of a lake occupied heavily by beastkin. While humans wandered past outside, they were vastly outnumbered by people with animal ears, horns, and tails. Despite that, the staff rushed out with menus, glassware, and cutlery. Anna told them to bring out whatever specialties they had, plus coffee for everyone. I get the feeling you're used to this, he told her, after the beastkin hurried away.
Part of my duty as Countess involved visiting the various towns and villages. That means sitting down for a drink or a simple meal in whatever they have available. Refusing would be deeply insulting. Whatever feelings they truly had for me, they did their best to make me feel welcome. The least I can do is be polite and kind.
Anna's smile turned brittle.
I do miss that part of the job.
Nathan winced. I take it you're too busy to travel much?
I travel quite a bit, but there are more towns in my duchy than there were villages in my old county.
Anna laughed.
And the reactions are very different now. People expect to see counts and barons around. A duchess is one step removed from royalty. The last time I went inside a tavern, half the town turned up to stare at me.
We're fortunate that we haven't been noticed then, Sen said.
Oh, we've definitely been noticed. The difference is that people are interested in Nathan, not Anna.
Narime stared at Fire, who merely smiled in response, then changed the subject.
As I was saying earlier, my lord, is this Kiana? I've heard a lot about her. She really does look quite like me, Fire chirped.
Both horse girls sat opposite each other. Nathan didn't need to imagine the tension between them. One of you is a unicorn, Nathan said, trying to diffuse the issue. And you're both very different in the ways that count.
She's going to become your champion? Fire asked.
Her voice wavered.
I am, Kiana said.
Fire's red eye stared at Kiana for several long seconds. Nathan expected them to turn back to him, but they never did. Her expression never changed, but he worried about what was going on in her head. Nathan hoped he wouldn't regret his next words. He didn't trust Fire, but she knew enough to be dangerous. On top of that, she held extensive influence in the Beastkin. Above all else, she was loyal. If Nathan made Fire his champion, he could investigate her emotions during the transfer process and double-check if she was deceiving him.
And you're also becoming my champion, Fire, Nathan said.
Before anyone could react, the staff brought out plates of fried fish, curried beef, and bowls of thick tomato soup. A whole hunk of decorative smoked cheese was set to the side, along with a knife and jam. Fire waited patiently for the staff to retreat. Then she squealed in excitement. Nathan felt that his eardrums were about to burst. Sen reached over to hug the horse girl first. The excitement quickly became contagious and overwhelmed the earlier jealousy and tension. More food was brought out along with wine, and Nathan suspected the owners were very happy with the bill they'd give Anna at the end. In the midst of it, Nathan found Kiana and ruffled her hair. She looked up at him in confusion.
You're fine? He asked her.
She rolled her eyes and chose to lean against him, pressing the side of her head against his chest.
I have the horn. She doesn't. In the end, I'm just glad that you chose me at all, Nathan.
You never needed to worry about that, Kiana. You'll make an excellent champion, he said.
Later that night, he found himself called to Alice's bedroom. She and Anna sat at a small table, drinking a white wine. Nathan refused the offer of a glass.
Suit yourself, Anna said. More for me.
Remember that there is a vote tomorrow morning, he told her.
You're my lover, Nathan, not my father.
He shuddered. I told you never to make a joke like that again.
Anna tilted her head. Oh, you did. I forgot. Guess I'll have to rethink my idea for dirty talk in the bedroom, then.
Alice stared at them in a mixture of horror and jealousy. Nathan moved the topic along.
It sounded like the vote is decided.
As decided as it can be. Tomorrow will be a big day in many ways. I've been absurdly busy. I wish I had more time for you.
Alice sighed. But I'm going to be busier afterward. Grandpa loved my proposal to reach out to other nobles as the princess. I don't think Uncle Leopold did, but he didn't object. Alice, I adore you, but I think you need to admit that the Emperor wants you to replace him, Anna said flatly. Alice and Nathan grimaced and looked at each other. I know, Alice said. If you've also realized it, then I guess I need to ask if you support me. Do you? Yes, both Anna and Nathan said without hesitation. Alice's breath hitched. She placed her wine glass on the table, then folded her hands in her lap. That means a lot, she said. Just to check, this isn't because there's no alternative? You... Alice, do you want to become Empress? Nathan asked. That's the real question. Nothing else matters. Tarbin isn't going to fuck off. Right now, the only thing that matters is that we support you. But you need to be the one to take the step. I imagine you don't trip over and fall into being an Empress. Well, I was practically born into this, so is it any different? Alice mumbled. Alice? Yes, I do, she snapped. This isn't how I wanted it. Can't everything stay as it is? I could enjoy my years with you. The two of you, I mean. Grandpa leads the Empire through all of this nonsense. You become a fantastic bastion. I don't need power if I have all of you. Nathan wondered if he had asked himself that same question in the past, if his old world had remained stuck in time with the demons outside Falmir, and Nathan enjoying a life of exile with his beloved champions in the north. Would he have been happy? Did the answer to that question matter anymore? I definitely empathize, Anna said, but these are the cards we've been dealt. I nearly tried to curl up and refuse to walk forward. Nathan picked me back up, and while some days I want to throw him down several flights of stairs for doing so, he was right.
Several? Nathan repeated.
Well, you're pretty tough. I imagine it would take a while to actually hurt you. Alice giggled. Then Anna joined in. Soon, both women leaned against the table as they laughed. The joke hadn't been that funny, but things might have felt a little grim for them lately. Thank you, Alice said. It will be hard, however.
I can only imagine, Nathan said. And I mean that. I don't know how the Emperor is elected beyond the basic idea that the Diet votes.
Alice stared at him in disbelief, but Anna nodded in agreement. Really? Alice said. Milgar had to explain it to me, Anna said defensively. The last election was over a decade before I was born. Alice grumbled. It's fairly simple, but there are lots of bureaucratic complexities.
Of course. Would we be in the Empire if there weren't?
She glared at him. He waited for her to continue. The Emperor needs to call an election first, or be incapacitated. Throwing him out requires almost every noble to agree. It's practically impossible, Alice explained. Afterward, nobles submit themselves to the Diet for consideration. We then remove anyone in service to the Empire, like active bastions, commoners, or those in the line of succession to an archduchy.
So a random knight could apply? Nathan asked.
Yes, but no, Alice smiled. The Diet has never accepted anyone less than a count, or someone from the family of a count. He nodded, and then gestured for her to continue. Next, the Prince's College votes on candidates. They control the Empire, so they choose who to reject with a majority vote. Finally, the entire Diet sits. This is complicated. Not every noble has the right to vote on the Emperor. Some can even vote twice. Fixing this would require not just altering the constitution, but grants of titles and lands from millennia ago.
It's impossible, in other words,
Nathan said. Yes. Altering the Constitution already requires almost every noble to agree, the approval of the Emperor, and every college to agree. Only changes blessed by Omria herself have succeeded, Alice said.
So the Constitution is effectively backed by the goddess. No wonder people don't want to change it, Nathan said. Isn't that bad?
Very. But the Nationalists are deeply unpopular in many corners. If the only alternative is to bend the rules a little, we might be able to sneak through. And if civil war breaks out, Alice grimaced. Well, changing the Constitution becomes a lot easier when all the nobles you disagree with are dead or unable to enter the palace. On that dark topic, they ended the night. Nathan prevented both women from drinking too much. Upon returning to his bedroom, he found it occupied by two very enthusiastic champions. Sen and Sunstorm took turns, as they often did. They were unapologetic in the morning.
It's not even late, Sen said. Look, it's a little after 7. What time is the big event?
10. I think I need to be there early, Nathan said, as he stepped into the bathroom with both of them. They were still naked from last night.
He rubbed at his stubble, realizing he needed to shave it off before appearing in front of the entire diet. Stepping into the shower, he fiddled with the taps until the water was just right.
The bathrooms here are massive, Sen mused,
placing their new clothes in a basket in the corner for later.
I can't imagine how long it takes to clean them.
Then she turned around and stared at Sunstorm, who had kneeled down in front of Nathan.
But I can imagine how long it takes to clean Nathan. Really, Cho, you couldn't wait? Sen said with a smirk,
watching as her fellow champion polished his cock with her mouth.
I guess we have a couple of hours. Why not have some more fun?
His shower stopped being about cleaning, and more about being cleaned out, as Sen and Sunstorm slurped and suckled at his length in front of him. They giggled and moaned as their fun turned serious, and he fucked them into the bed together. Fortunately, at least one of them kept track of time. They did manage to clean up, and he even shaved.
9:45, Nathan said, as he ducked out of his bedroom. Princess Alice said to meet her in the throne room, one of the royal guards said. She came by earlier. Nathan froze. Shit.
The door had been locked, but Alice definitely knew what he had been doing.
Thanks, he said.
For whatever reason, Sen remained behind and spoke with that same guard. Sunstorm raised an eyebrow at her when she caught up.
She wanted to know if we really fucked all night and morning, Sen said.
You're joking, right? Nathan asked. What did she actually want to know?
Both champions smirked at him.
That wasn't a joke? He groaned.
One asked me about how big you were the other day, Sunstorm said. I think you have fans.
He already knew that. Did the beastkin at Garrick Pass act the same way? Was that why Faye acted so catty around them? He found Alice, and she led him into the grand hall with little more than a smile and a raised eyebrow at his champions. To his surprise, he stood on the lowest level of the hall, beside Alice and the Emperor. Leopold and Melis flanked the Emperor on the opposite side. Normally, rooms appeared larger when empty. The opposite applied to the grand hall. Nathan thought it appeared massive when empty, but when full of people, it genuinely intimidated him. A hall that could contain the entire population of a large town held a power all its own. Today, it was packed from wall to ceiling with people, and looked larger and grander than ever. Cordons and magical barriers separated the nobles from guests on every level. Royal knights stood watch on every level to protect everyone. Everywhere Nathan looked, he saw someone of importance. Nobles flooded all three levels of the grand hall, clustering toward the balconies so they could watch and participate in the proceedings. Only the archdukes and dukes had any space to themselves. Nathan spotted Anna with Archduke von Milgar on the top level. Narime and Fire stood with him, alongside a pair of duo-gem champions that protected Milgar. Tarbin stood with Nerevia and a cluster of nationalist nobles on the upper level. They had managed to sneak onto the same level as the archdukes. Supposedly that didn't happen normally, but there must be too many people here today. Even the ground floor was filled with people. Royal knights lined the central walkway, and the tails of the beastkin were more obvious than ever as they stood up on end. No nobles stood on this level. Instead, the public had been allowed to crowd in. Barons, knights, sorcerers, merchants, anybody of a status high enough to pass muster and have a pass to enter the palace grounds was allowed in today. Given the number of facilities in the palace, literally tens of thousands of people had access. Nathan felt that most of those people stood here today. They piled out the front doors of the palace like an unending tide of human flesh. Melis had set up some sort of external speaker system in case this happened. It was used for the Emperor's annual address, but there had been anticipation that today's vote would draw attention. The largest war in recent history was about to end, and it was doing so against the will of one of the most powerful factions of nobles. Despite the spectacle, the day proceeded as expected. Endless speeches, lots of posturing, sound and fury from the nationalists. Nathan did his best to appear alert, given far too many eyes were on him. It helped that Sunstorm prodded him any time he began to grow bored. The most notable unexpected event was that the Emperor only spoke briefly. He handed over much of his responsibility to Alice, who in turn pushed peace and reconciliation hard. Nathan got a mention due to his efforts in bringing peace to the Federation and that the Empire remained the mightiest nation on Domar. Naturally, Tarbin and a long train of nationalists gave a similar screed about why peace with Trafome was a mistake, about how the Empire should push farther and reclaim the lost territory of the Empire using its military might. Lots of religious rhetoric. Nathan wondered if Tarbin and Fire learned from the same scriptwriter, although Fire tarred her opponents with heresy, while Tarbin tried to create zealots from his supporters. It didn't escape Nathan that this war had started over religious affairs. The Empire had started this war over the Pearlescent Canyon, the place where Omria descended to Domar. The peace terms gave the Empire ownership of the canyon, so long as Trafome were allowed to continue their religious rites and services there without interruption. By all accounts, a political victory. But it wasn't enough, given Nathan had conquered a nation. Notably, the archdukes remained silent. Anna spoke briefly, after Tarbin attacked her refusal to send military aid. Her brother continued to serve in the war, after all, along with soldiers from her former county. She reminded everyone that the war with the Federation had been settled without intervention from the Imperial Army, save for Nathan himself. The fact that the Nationalists supporting Archdukes said nothing spoke volumes. They held the true power in the Empire. Nathan was terrible at politics, but he knew that was significant. Tarbin was an attack dog, but he wasn't being publicly supported. The vote came and went. The archdukes all abstained. The peace treaty passed with well over half the vote. A hush fell over the grand hall. In Falmir, or the spires, this would be when the royal knights started slamming their weapons into the ground and chanting about the greatness of the nobility or some such nonsense. That didn't happen. The knights remained on edge, ready for anyone to try to attack a noble, the Emperor, or possibly Alice. The Emperor raised his hands. "The Diet has spoken. I will acknowledge the will of the Empire. We are now at peace with the Order of Trafome.
The war has ended. Cheers erupted through the hall. Not from everybody, but from enough people. The nobles restrained themselves to enthusiastic applause. After Alice hugged Nathan, he knew that word of his involvement with the imperial family would rip through the entire empire. Chapter 12. The following days were far tamer. Nathan held many of the meetings he had organized while Alice and Anna attended the many votes in the Diet. He ended up drinking tea and coffee for hours on end some days. At first, many nobles had turned down his request to meet with them, or had deflected to their respective archduke. In the days following the peace vote, those refusals swiftly changed into requests to personally meet with Nathan. Extravagant luncheons and degustations at some of the priciest restaurants were often offered. Part of Nathan was interested. In reality, he simply didn't have the time to physically go to most of them. Narime deftly shifted her focus from Anna to him, and began to work with several officials under Milgar and Alice to prioritize the train of nobility seeking Nathan's attention. His nights ran late, either because he was pulled into meetings with the Emperor or Milgar, or because Anna needed his advice on something military in nature. He did attend a couple of private events with some interested nobles, although only with Anna, and laid off the alcohol. "Leopold, don't take this the wrong way, but this only cements my opinion of politics," Nathan said one night, just before the final weekend. The two of them shared a drink in a parlor in the palace. Alice, the Emperor, Anna, and the others were discussing some major taxation vote on Monday, the final sitting day of the Diet. On Tuesday, all the nobles would set off home. Most of them would be horribly hungover as they sat in their carriages or used gateways to teleport across the empire. "The Diet only sits once per season. Sometimes it even decides that winter is too cold, so most of the nobles don't turn up. Or there's a war on, so they can't hold any important votes." Leopold chuckled. "Sessions like this are rare. The last time I saw the palace that full was when I was young."
"Was that when Omria used to crown emperors?" Nathan joked.
Leopold gave him an upturned look that suggested he wasn't quite that old and didn't appreciate the joke. Then he chuckled anyway.
"One day you'll be in my place," Leopold said. "I plan to do what you didn't."
"Oh?"
"Retire to a nice manor by the coast with a dozen beastkin maids who love me dearly," Nathan said, repeating a line Leopold once used to chide him.
"Only a dozen? If you think you can get away with so few, then maybe I should try to become friends with Tarbin."
Leopold smirked as he took a big swig of his ale.
"It's not that bad," Nathan said.
"I spend a lot of time in the Royal Guard barracks. Kiana does as well," Leopold said, making his reason for doing so evident.
"That means I hear a lot of their chatter."
"Urgh," Nathan placed his head in his arms.
"You are the topic of a lot of dirty talk and fantasies."
Leopold paused.
"Perhaps more than I appreciate."
"Let's change topics before you become too fatherly," Nathan said.
The old man laughed. "I am very aware of Kiana's interest in you. She is a unicorn, and they only accept men for two reasons, family and mating."
That was news to Nathan. He straightened up.
"Really? You didn't know?"
Leopold clicked his tongue as he took a long swig. Silence fell. Nathan looked around them. The parlor was empty. Like all rooms in the palace, it was obscenely huge. 100 people could drink in here comfortably. Nathan and Leopold sat in a corner, away from windows and doors.
Both of them had good views of the rest of the room. They made a good pair, paranoid bastions who snuck away while others dealt with the nitty-gritty of the Empire. "About fire," Nathan began to say.
"Ah, yes, her," Leopold said, tone darkening. "She concerns me. Are you sure about her?"
"What's the saying that gets bandied about by bastions? Something about how remaining ignorant only causes peril," Nathan said.
"There are a few of those sayings."
Leopold bit his lip, gaze distant.
"I like the way the Dark Elves put it. If you know everything, you'll never be in danger. If you don't know your enemy, you can still survive or win. If you know nothing, you're already dead."
He laughed.
"Although they put it far better."
Nathan had heard that one before from Nerevia. It was the creed of hunters, the Dark Elf champions, who killed those who opposed the spires.
"So you don't trust her?"
"Good."
"What about her?" Leopold asked.
"Anna said you thought I already claimed her."
A grunt.
"I did," the old man said. "The record said as much."
"But her magical signature
is neutral, no reading."
Nathan blinked.
"I don't follow."
Leopold's glass clinked on the table as he lowered it.
"Well, now, it's nice to be able to teach you something for once. I've gotten a little too used to you knowing every bastion trick of the trade."
"I thought you didn't teach, only tested," Nathan replied.
"You're far past the point of needing to be tested, Nathan. You proved that during the Cascade. Those succubi twins were terrifyingly strong. I heard about what happened on your side. Amazing, terrifying magic took place. On both sides."
Leopold's eyes pierced him. Nathan shuffled uncomfortably in his chair, but said nothing.
"As for what we're discussing, it's simple. Fire has been ignored by her bastion for years. That's why Tereus used her as a bodyguard, then gave her away. She refilled her gems from the Binding Stone. You're doing the same, aren't you?"
"I am. She heads up to Castle Tardis whenever she needs to top up."
Leopold grunted.
"A bastion's magical signature is like their scent. But if you don't rub it on the champion every so often, it wears off. Nobody has marked her recently. We use a similar trick for champions working for the Spymaster."
The explanation made enough sense for Nathan, despite the strange analogy that made it sound like he was a beast that physically marked his champions. At the same time, it was a convenient one for fire. Damn. Nathan hated the situation. He wanted a black and white answer for her, to ease his doubts. Reality wasn't kind, however. He finished his drinks with Leopold and retired for the night. That brought him to the weekend, and a day he had been dreading. The Diet was on a short break while the Emperor prepared his ball. It was time for Nathan to tell the others the truth.
"Are you sure you want to leave fire behind?" Anna asked him, as they rode in carriages to a noble's park in the city.
"She asked for the day off," he defended, "and she did know we were going somewhere together."
"I think she wanted you to invite her," Anna said primly.
She looked at the others in the carriage. Kiana and Sen rode with them. Alice, Narime, and Sunstorm used a separate carriage. Whisking away Alice for a trip had been difficult, given the security situation. Only the Emperor's personal intervention had allowed it to happen.
"Is there something wrong with fire?" Sen asked.
"The speech," Kiana said flatly.
Nathan winced. "That's part of it. But yes, although fire is becoming my champion, I need to assess her further before I tell her the full story."
"I'm glad," Kiana said with a small smile.
Then she blushed.
"Not that you mistrust her, but that you still value security. I..." She trailed off before she stumbled over her words.
You know, Nathan, why don't you just screw them together? Sen suggested. It might solve their problems.
I don't have a problem, Kiana muttered.
Sure you do. She has red eyes and looks like you.
Sen laughed as Kiana jumped at her before Nathan broke up their fight. Eventually, they arrived at the park. They set up a small picnic under a large tree. Although it was a weekend, the park was largely empty. With the diet in session, many stores had extended trading hours. Merchants and nobles worked hard to pull in extra money from the wealthy visitors. That suited Nathan just fine. He and Narime cast numerous wards around the picnic in order to stop eavesdropping. Then, after they had eaten their lunch, he sat down in a circle of women he trusted. Seraph and Faye weren't here, but he'd tell them the full story once he returned. He supposed Vera was also missing, but he didn't want her to know until much later in her bastion training. Letting her know some of these details might be downright dangerous right now. So, Sen and Sunstorm know most of this, but there are some details they don't fully understand, Nathan admitted. Sen's eyes shot open.
Wait, Nathan, are you? She began to say, before clamming up.
He stared at her, then scowled. Ifrit told you? A confused look. Then she turned bright red and said,
He knew? That asshole wasn't just guessing? He fucking knew, and you've talked to him about it?
Shit, what a landmine. Sen, calm down, Nathan snapped. She froze in her rage. Everybody looked between her and Nathan in confusion.
Sorry, she said. It's just, I kind of suspected a few things, but he just played the it is not my place card. Knowing that you talked to him hurts.
I needed some advice. Ancient spirits can help, Nathan said dryly. Sen's eyes lit up.
Oh, so that's when, she clicked her tongue. I had wondered why he made that stupid comment at the end. He wanted to distract me.
Moving on, Nathan redirected the conversation back to the topic at hand.
All of you know that I graduated from the academy, became a bastion due to Leopold's intervention, and then arrived at Garrick Pass, he said. Then I rebuilt the ruined fortress, turned Fae and Sen into champions, and uncovered the Federation's plot to destabilize the ley lines.
Nods all around.
As a result, I stopped the Federation's invasion and then expanded the Empire. Impressive stuff.
He gave himself a clap while they stared at him in confusion.
Except that's not what should have happened, he said,
voice going cold.
Instead, the ley lines are destabilized. Demons invade Garrick en masse. The Federation invades almost simultaneously, overrunning the border while the Empire is at war with Trafome. Chaos ensues. A messenger emerges from the portals and wipes out a Laik, and therefore the Empire, practically overnight. The remaining nations swoop in and defeat the messenger, then carve up the Empire.
Every expression was different. Narimes was shocked, but understanding. Anna and Alice appeared mostly confused, but fear gripped Alice. A joint understanding ran through Sen and Sunstorm, who knew this story, if not the ending. Kiana licked her lips, uncertainty running across her face.
You say that should have happened, Kiana said. Not that this is what would have happened if you weren't here.
Yes, because I shouldn't be here, he said.
Narime cursed in her native tongue.
Nathan, you're not talking about seeing the future. You're talking about something completely different.
That's right. If I lied, you'd know, he said.
Before he came here, he had considered lying about having amazing foresight. But he remembered Kadria's lesson on how time worked. If Narime knew any of this, and she might, then she would be furious about his lie.
I would, she said. You may have somehow bested me in ascended magic, but I suspect I know more of the theory than you do. I was on the Guardian Council of Kurai. There are things about messengers that I know, which few others even have an inkling of.
Then I'll be frank. I come from a time when the Empire collapsed, when the Federation's plan succeeded too well and triggered the end of the world.
He closed his eyes.
Each messenger grew more powerful, and the portals stronger. I worked with you to protect the Federation, but it was too late to stop Tonius.
He paused. Froze, really. His memories recalled those days. Defending Forzel Valley from the horde of demons. Armies of refugees streaming through, until there were suddenly none, and he realized what that meant. Trying to convince the Dark Elves to leave the spires. Nadime's soft tails curled around him. Hands gripped him.
"It's fine, Nathan," she said. "Take your time."
He shooed them away after a little while, but not before taking the chance to lean into their embrace. Their concerned eyes bothered him, but he pushed that feeling down.
"In the end, only Falmir remained," he said. "My homeland."
Alice and Anna stared at him.
"What?"
Anna blurted out.
"Oh,"
Alice said mildly. "So is that why you and Charlotte?"
"She was the princess I worked under for my career as a bastion, yes," he said. "I never met you, due to..."
He coughed.
"But she told me about you and your friendship. I never became too involved in Falmir's politics, given the sheer amount of fighting there was."
"What happened to her? Did the two of you..."
Alice looked away.
"Oh, no." Nathan laughed. "She was a princess. I was a cursed bastion who survived the fall of countless nations. I don't know what happened to her in the end. Falmir deposed the royal family, and she was exiled to some corner of the country. I manned one of the more dangerous border portals."
He shrugged.
Nadime's eyes narrowed. "Nathan, what about us? Why are you here? You act like you know me. I've definitely noticed that, and this explains a lot, but it raises more questions."
He stared at her. Sen and Sunstorm leaned against him. Unlike the others, they hadn't moved away from him. After several long seconds, Nadime's eyes widened.
"Nathan?"
"I'm here because there is nothing else, Nadime," he said. "But there's something here. All of you are here, and I intend to ensure things remain that way."
Silence followed. Nathan wished that a wind blew, so that there would at least be the rustling of wind to break it. Nothing happened. The park was too distant from the buildings for noise to carry.
I know this might be a little mean, but did we all die?"
Anna asked, wincing when everybody looked at her.
"Pretty sure, yeah," Sen said. "I don't actually remember what happened, but I have the emotions. Everything goes super intense near the end. Then nothing. And, I have some feelings about certain people that definitely tell me what happened to them before the end."
Should I ask?" Kiana said, eyes wide.
"Please don't," Nathan said. She gulped, then looked down.
"If you're from Falmir, what about me?" Anna asked, her voice quiet. I relied on you to defend the pass. Did Vera..."
She trailed off at the look on Nathan's face.
"I never met the two of you before I arrived here," Nathan said, looking at Anna and Alice. "That's what it means for a messenger to overrun a nation. They destroy everything almost overnight.
I'm changing things here. The two of you are part of that, and I am very grateful for that."
Anna breathed a sigh of relief. "I was worried for a second there."
Nadime stared at him.
"So Sen and Sunstorm know Because they are from the future?
Close enough. It's more that we have our old personalities, Sen chirped. I'm closer to a mix of my old self and the Sen from this timeline. Sunstorm is basically her old self.
I guess it's a personality thing, Sunstorm said. I remember Sen being softer. New Sen is nice, though.
I'm glad you like the new improved me, Sen said with a wink.
What are you, Nathan? Because you remember everything, Narime said. Like I said, I know more of the theory than you, and it points toward a theory I don't want to consider.
I came here after I lost everything, he said, staring Narime down. I am both Nathan Straub and Nathan Martell. That's, my original name.
Cute, Anna said.
He rolled his eyes. Narime didn't let up with her glare. However I arrived here, I intend to prevent messengers and demons from destroying Domar, he said. I promise you that, Narime.
Even though you used a messenger's help to come here in the first place?
Narime asked, voice surprisingly calm given her accusation. Eyes bulged all around.
Fucking knew it, Sen muttered.
Others stared at her, and she rolled her eyes.
Goddess, have none of you listened to Nathan? Spatial, temporal, and mental manipulation is what messengers are all about. And he started mastering that shit the moment he arrived. It was super obvious.
Nathan coughed, feeling self-conscious about his poor ability to keep his secrets from spreading.
And you don't care? Narime asked Sen.
No, I trust Nathan. I love him with everything I have, she said. He's done more for me than anyone else in this world. When he says something, I believe him. He's not perfect, but fuck, I'm not either. And didn't you work for the guys who nearly ended the world? Tanius nearly screwed everything up. Humans seem just as capable of fucking the world to me.
Narime opened her mouth to say something, then closed it. She sighed.
So, your secret is that you saw the end of Domar, and now you're working with a messenger to stop it from happening again?
Narime asked. That's the short version. I came back to the time when everything fell apart, which is where several of you were clustered. You kind of fell in my lap, saving me the trouble of hunting you down. He winked at Narime, and she blushed, her tails curling around herself. But there are a lot of champions from my past. Many aren't even champions yet. They probably won't ever become one.
Because the world isn't ending? Kiana asked.
Yes. The need for champions and bastions increased drastically due to the losses we took during every battle, he explained. Anyone who is a champion today was a veteran within a few years. Things only got worse. A lot of the secrets I know and the magic I can use is because it was developed in response to disaster.
The ley line disruption, Kiana said, her eyes widening. That's why you knew about it.
Yes. It was used as a weapon after the invasion started. Once the Empire fell, international relations worsened. Trefalm and Falmir used increasingly devastating tactics against each other, he said. Other techniques were created out of desperation. I'm working with the Sorcerer's Lodge to recreate some of what I know is possible.
But, Nathan, who are we to you? Alice asked him.
I trust you. Despite some of the elements of this story, your actions speak volumes about you and your conviction. But while you never met me, what about the others?
Everyone is their own person, Nathan said forcefully. I already told Faye this. Whatever happened in my world, it's...
He swallowed.
Those are my memories. You aren't. You are real. I can touch you, and whatever decisions you make are your own. The Fae I know isn't anything like the Yafela from my world. Kiana is far more adorable.
He ruffled the unicorn's hair, which she put up with. Her tail wagged in response. Those words calmed at least a few hearts, he believed, but one remained unsettled.
I'm not attacking you, Nathan, but are you convinced you made the right decision after all of this?
Narime asked. Nathan looked around. He saw several beautiful women, most of whom he loved. None of their gazes held hatred or fear for him, despite what they'd heard. Then he remembered that cold, empty feeling from that one night.
Yes, I'm certain, he said.
Good. Narime smiled at him. Conviction is important in any bastion I serve, and especially in the man who made me his mate.
With that, they had a nice picnic. The diet was nearly over, and it was time for Nathan to turn his mind to other matters at home. But first, he'd enjoy some time with the women he cared about the most. Chapter 13 Nerevia.
She should be dead, Tarbin roared. You had one fucking job and you fucked it up, like your shitty little kingdom has fucked up everything in history.
The lanky sorcerer opposite Tarbin barely even raised an eyebrow. He lazed on a stained sofa, wearing unmarked robes that gave him the sharp appearance of a sorcerer. His messy, rust-brown hair clashed with his clothes, as did his shadow of stubble. Next to him stood a hooded and armored woman, whose face was shrouded in magical shadow. This man was Gareth Pike, a bastion from the kingdom of Falmir. The woman next to him was a duo-gem champion who unnerved Nerevia. They were inside the basement of a brothel, in one of the larger merchant quarters of Alaik. This one was a nationalist front, although the women were the real deal. Nerevia had heard them being used by the nationalists here. She doubted they paid, and also doubted the women were human.
My job went about as well as everything else planned, Gareth said with a wry smile. How did your war pan out? Oh, that's right. There isn't a war anymore. What will your movement do now? What do you call yourself? Nationalists?
What a name! Tarbin's eyes turned into embers.
Nerevia waited for the inevitable clash. The two of them had already brawled before the Diet, after the assassination attempt on Anna failed. But Tarbin pulled himself back. He spat on the dirty floor.
Don't talk about shit you don't understand, he said. What happened to the second attempt? I told you about their fucking picnic. Hell, you even got word about the visit to that dumb church.
Gareth remained still for several long moments before saying,
You didn't tell me about the duo gems he had.
They're not his. That shithead Leopold classified everything relating to my little shit. The duo gems are loners, Leopold's bitches, still draining out from the old man's visits.
Gareth rolled his eyes at Tarbin's words.
Let's pretend that I believe you. Actually, let's not. If those duo gems aren't Nathan's, then they are the best actors ever. Not to mention that his magic is all over them.
Tarbin flat out ignored Gareth.
So insecure,
Falmir's bastion chuckled.
That doesn't change the fact you didn't warn me. I didn't move on the church because he had two duo gems with him. And the picnic?
Gareth shook his head.
I'm a nobody. Some shitty little bastion who got sent here because if I'm caught, it's easy for Falmir to claim that I went rogue. That's how little you matter. You got my crappy assistance. But Nathan...
Don't you fucking dare,
Tarbin growled, taking a step forward.
Like you, I was at Kurai.
I felt the messenger, Gareth said. All of us did.
Tarbin froze.
Those are rumors.
Gareth's eyes flicked to Nerevia, then back to Tarbin.
I'm not talking about the cascade. Unlike you, I'm a sorcerer. It's the one thing I hold pride in. And let me tell you, Nathan knows things I would sell my soul to know.
Nerevia stared at him. Gareth was talking about Nathan, wasn't he? The adorable little count who had dabbled with sorcery for years while running Tarbin's county? Where could he possibly learn that sort of thing? The academy didn't teach it. Who had Nathan met after being disowned by Tarbin? Nerevia found herself imagining amazing things about the year that Nathan had spent without her. By the time she came back to reality, the meeting had moved on.
You're going back? Tarbin asked. No reason for me to stay here. Those catgirl spies are sniffing around, and they have a massive hound I don't want to mess with.
Gareth grimaced.
Your spy master is a mean one.
Tarbin grunted.
Not that smart, though. He bought the bullshit and doesn't think I was involved.
Maybe that's just what he wants you to think, Gareth said with a smirk.
He stood up and stretched.
Whatever the case, I'm gone. I have a bed at home that needs sleeping in and a portal to protect. This has been a colossal waste of time for everyone, save for learning that there's some insanely talented people lurking on Domar.
Nerevia swore that Tarbin was going to clobber Gareth for that remark. Or try, given Gareth knew how to fight. Despite looking like a twig, he was still a bastion. Nothing happened. After Gareth and his champion left, Tarbin swept out of the basement and into a waiting carriage 2 blocks away. Nerevia went with him. They rode in silence for some time.
We're leaving the city? She asked in surprise. What about the apartment? I'm a count. I have people to clean it and take our things back for us, Tarbin grunted out.
He leaned his chin on one burly hand, glaring out the window at nothing. Like most carriages, it was enchanted to only allow people to see out.
Well, now that the war's over, what do we do?
Nerevia asked, half teasing, half serious. A smirk crossed his face as he looked at her. Then it turned into a leer as he looked her up and down. His eyes latched onto her barely covered dark tits, then her crotch. Everything about his expression made it clear that he thought about her as nothing other than a piece of meat. Sexualized meat. Normally, this would be the point where her body would heat up. She had always loved the way he treated her and looked at her. But she had lost the will to even feign interest now. She stared blankly back at Tarbin until he grunted and looked away.
You didn't believe his stupid shit, did you? Tarbin spat.
What?
The end of war is good for us. If we're up there fighting, we can't be down here preparing to take the throne.
He rolled his eyes, as if that was obvious.
A bunch of soldiers have been up north, fighting, bleeding, and dying for years. In the end, the Emperor says that it doesn't matter, and brings them all back. They return home, only to find a bunch of foreigners overrunning the Diet, and Beastkin getting uppity.
Tarbin laughed.
It's perfect for us.
The carriage trundled out of the city. Slowly, Nerevia allowed the truth of what Tarbin had said to sink in.
What about the Federation? She asked,
trying to piece things together and resolve her confusion.
That wasn't supposed to happen, he grumbled. I don't know how those old fucks pulled it off. We pulled out all the stops. No extra military support. Leopold was the only bastion, other than the little shit. Even asked Falmir to make sure things stayed bad.
A pit formed in Nerevia's stomach.
Falmir leaked everything about Alice. That's how the Federation knew where she was.
She hadn't told Tarban a damn word about Alice. Betraying an Imperial princess was a step she refused to take. Alice had trusted her. That she had become the prime suspect for leaking Alice's location had hurt.
Ha! They did that? Damn, guess they really did hold up their end of the bargain. Shame they still fucked it up. Figured a cascade would make it easy for them to lop off both bitches' heads and call it an accident.
Tarban sneered. That had nearly happened. Nerevia briefly wondered how bad things would be if Falmir had actually killed both Alice and Anna. She remembered the confrontation between Nathan and Tarban, and how easily Nathan had brushed his father off. Then she reimagined it, except Nathan tore Tarban apart with his bare hands. That felt right to her. He kept his cool to a frightening degree when she saw him, but she had seen the fury in his eyes when Tarban had disowned him and humiliated him. That fury had reappeared briefly when Tarban confronted him, but Nathan had suppressed it. Nerevia wanted to see Nathan's raw, unrestrained anger in all its violent glory.
"So, what are we doing, then?" she asked.
"Building support," Tarban said. "I want to head into the Federation, as I don't know what those chuckle fucks are like. The Archdukes are predictable, but these new dukes aren't."
"So that's it? We're going east?"
"Fuck no," he said. "They'd be all over me if I went there. I need a reason."
He pointed a massive finger at her. "And you're going to give me one. Once we're back, head to the Spires. You know people there, Little Miss Champion. I have a contact you can speak with to arrange something."
"Did he cause the cascade?" Nerevia asked, narrowing her eyes.
Tarban exploded upward. The entire carriage shook due to his weight. Violence poured off the man as he ripped Nerevia from her seat and cocked a huge fist. His eyes glared at her, veins bulging from his neck.
"Did he fucking tell you that? Did that little shit say that I was a fucking heretic? Did he?"
Tarban roared, his voice loud enough to cause her ears to ring. Her eyes latched onto his fist. Her body reacted to the sensation of imminent violence. She sighed with pleasure, eyes curving as she relaxed and prepared for him to strike her. Her bones would crack, her blood vessels burst, and she'd be slammed into the carriage. Maybe he'd keep going if he really lost himself, and she wouldn't be able to be healed until they reached his county. Moments passed. Tarban sneered at her.
"You fucking slut!"
He spat on her. Then he threw her backward. She slammed into the seat, but the worst it did was cause a small ache in her back. After he sat back down, he glowered at the window again.
"I am a devout follower of Omria. Whatever that little shit says, I will never cause a cascade."
But he probably had something to do with the people who did, Nerevia realized. Word had reached her that doubt was being raised over Tanius's involvement in the cascade. If Tarban hadn't caused it, that left only two real possibilities: betrayal within the Spires themselves, or sabotage by Falmir. The latter left Tarban with few excuses about his devotion to the goddess.
"Why am I going to the Spires?" she asked, once she'd calmed down. "The Haukim Desert. The Empire is strong enough to protect its own damn borders. We don't need your subservient asses to do it for us."
He snorted.
"Once they pull out, I'll transfer to the border to protect it. Once there, I can investigate the local situation
and convince a lot of people that the real enemy were the Beastkin," Nerevia thought. Despite her misgivings, she had her mission. She remained Tarban's champion.
Unfortunately, being told to do something didn't give her the magical ability to bypass fundamental laws of reality. She had left the spires long ago when she had chosen her life under Tarbin. The only way they'd welcome her back would be in chains or mounted on a spit. And not even the fun kind of spit. Fortunately, she had her own contact. Tarbin's was utterly useless, as he was some dumb functionary in the central Jorman spire. Probably some useless advisor to one of the council members. Nerevia reached out to her contact. The reply was swifter than expected. They had been in contact lately, but only for idle gossip. The speed of the response suggested that Nerevia had a good shot of getting into the spires. She organized the meeting and headed out. Once she left, she'd be free of Tarbin for weeks, if not months. A small part of her suggested that it could be forever. A certain someone had been recruiting champions from other bastions, after all. The meeting place was a tavern in a mining town close to the spires. The Dark Elves controlled part of Forzel Valley near the spires, although they didn't do anything with the land. It was one of the most important trade routes in Domar as a result, as no nation